I want to welcome to Radio Gorgeous Melanie Whitman, author of Lama Sutra, a collection of short stories, which has just been longlisted for the 2017 Edgehill Prize, the UK's only prize for short story collections, as well as it has just been announced. And when I say just been announced, I mean just been announced that the BBC Radio 4 Extra will be rerunning their series Time Being, which includes the title story Lama Sutra.
It does.
Exactly. Welcome, Melanie Whitman.
Thank you very much. Very pleased to meet you, Donna. Thank you for inviting me.
I think we have to start with that title story.
Okay.
Lama Sutra.
Yes.
It does feature in your website, features llamas,
yes,
etc. I think it's also a good introduction to the collection of short stories and gives people an idea of your style of writing, etc.
I think you're right. And I was struggling with what to call it as a collection, because obviously I wanted to have something that gave that suggestion of sort of all these parts coming together. And yes, it was the story that was on Radio 4, and it's one of my favourite stories in there. But also Lama Sutra, the word sutra means thread that binds thing, or stitch that binds something together. So I thought the idea would be that it could kind of bind the collection. And obviously, it is as it suggests, Lama Sutra. There's something slightly sexual, something slightly to do with animals and a hint of bestiality. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I don't know. Do you want me to tell you about the story, or?
As much as you want to reveal about the story.
Okay.
Because I would say, yeah, it does have the earmarks of the collection. There's playfulness.
Yeah.
There is sort of other possibilities that are, I think in writing terms you call that speculative.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. No, you're dead right. It is that whole idea, I think, and as you say, that's the kind of new term, speculative, which covers maybe sci-fi, anything strange, a bit of magic realism. And I do like stories like that. So the collection has some very straight, sort of gritty realist stories, but also there are some there that do have that sort of magic realism, that speculative aspect to them. And Lama Sutra is one of those. It kind of fools you. It's very, very straight to begin with. It's about a couple going through IVF, and they've tried several times. Husband's a cyclist, and the wife is trying very hard, and they're suffering, and it gives you a little bit of detail. But as you say, it's quite light and humorous. And they are cycling past a llama farm one day, and she decides to go and volunteer there because she sees the llamas, and she sees them being mated, and she is, I don't know quite how to say this, turned on by this frisson, this emotion, this sensuality with the llamas. And the story goes from there. So I won't give you the ending. It won't be a spoiler, but it is very sensual. I think I had an interview with someone else, and they said, oh, so it's 50 Shades of Grey. And I was horrified. I said, oh, God, no. It's far more subtle than that. So yes, Hints of sensuality and bizarre.
I did want to discuss the sexuality throughout the book, because I thought that was something very interesting that you introduced. You, with other stories as well as this one, it's not just female sexuality. It's sexuality of all ages,
yes,
and genders, and animals. It must be said.
Yes, there are lots of animals, worryingly.
There are lots of animals. They show up in the strangest places. But it struck me that it was nice that it was introduced and incorporated in a normal way.
Yes.
In the way that it is experienced. And a lot of life is sexualized.
Yes.
Or sensualized. We respond to things in that way. We may not say we're responding, you know, and it's not really even socially necessary to chat about it.
Sure.
But it is part of our experience.
I totally agree. And I think anyone who's a writer has that curiosity of what lies beneath. And I think whenever I'm starting a story, my question is kind of, what if? And it's that, as you say, it's those sort of undercurrents of sensuality that are present in life and whatever we do. And there's one story there called After the Flood, and it was actually inspired by a poem by the poet Jo Shapcott. And she writes about this, about Mrs. Noah after the ark, thinking back on her time on the ark and thinking back, as you say, in a very sensual, erotic way about the lion, the male lion. And I just read the poem and thought, do you know what, I could make a story out of this. And, you know, that whole question, what on earth would she be thinking if she had seen her entire family, cousins, friends all drowned because her husband wanted to build an ark and she's thrust on there. And suddenly there's a lovely, golden, tawny lion. So it does sound a bit weird. But as you say, it's done in a strangely straight way and hopefully kind of lyrical and poetic. And, I mean, I don't know, for me, all the good stories, short stories, they kind of shine a light on the human condition. They show our frailties. And I think it's that, just finding something that we can respond to. And just human frailty, I think. And, as you said, what lies beneath the surface. So
I think the Mrs. Noah one is a great one to talk about, because one, everyone knows what the story was.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
God spoke to her. There was a flood, and you know, get your children out of the water. You know, it's muddy. Whatever.
But you can't save them.
Yeah, exactly. and I liked the sort of the man behind the myth, the sort of into the woods experience of beyond the myth.
Yes,
and the story is told as he's still this sort of almost like Greek heroic god and flawed in that way.
Yes.
What if God spoke in your ear and then he didn't anymore?
Yes.
And then how were you treated after the flood?
Absolutely.
And also the fact that she's still just Mrs. Noah.
Yes.
Like with no name, you know, nothing of her own except for that lion. You know?
Absolutely.
And how would it be lived?
Yes. And I think that, as you say, that's exactly it. That question, what if? And also, I think we're brought up from when we're tiny, anyone with children, or obviously we've been kids ourselves, just to that tradition of being told a series of fairy tales, myths, Bible stories, legends, the Greek tales, and we are exposed to narrative, to fiction in that way. But obviously in the past, females tended to be very passive. And for me, I do this with my writing groups as well, we often look at an old tale for inspiration and look at something like Noah's Ark and think about giving a voice to someone who didn't have a voice. And, you know, in a way, not to be a feminist, but often the people that didn't have a voice were the females. And so it was just for me to think, what if? Let's just take Mrs. Noah, let's make her not quite so passive, let's ask what she was thinking. And I mean, it's the same with fairy tales. It's what Disney are doing at the moment with all their remakes of fairy tales, from this passive heroine who waited for the woodcutter or the prince or the fairy godmother or anyone to rescue them and point them in the right direction. Suddenly we have Disney's kick-ass heroines who are taken over. And I, you know, that's what I've done with, there's a story in there called After Ever After, and it's about Rapunzel. She's married the prince, and strangely enough, she's a little bored. And she's now thinking back very fondly on the witch and how the witch used to brush her hair. And
wasn't so bad, old witchy.
No, exactly. Actually, the witch was quite nice in comparison to his terribly protective husband, the prince. So, yes, it is giving a voice to the unvoiced and just taking a story from a different angle. But they're great stories, and we all know them, and we're used to that kind of narrative. And it's just playing around them.
Mm. And as you say, you take the stance, whether it's an old story or sometimes there's one story where you give sort of life behind, say, the person, a trafficked person. And we hear trafficked in our head. It doesn't have a personal story.
Sure.
You take a what if. What if there was one day in that woman's story? What would it be like?
Yes.
And who would she be?
Yes.
And in other ways that you do that, you take, you know, sort of, like a woman seeing a llama or whatever. And you take this what if point, and then you sort of follow it to its natural conclusion. Okay, so then what would it look like? Logically, yes. Then what would we have? You know? And so, and that's very fun. And I'm sort of seeing how that does become a thread.
Yes.
Throughout.
Absolutely. Like, and as you said, the one Baking Blind about the girl who's trafficked from Lithuania. Again, and I think for me, it's looking at a political situation or something that is happening at the moment, something current, but actually maybe mentioning that. But what you're really looking at are personalities about the individual, and you are kind of shining a light on that person, as I said before, our kind of frailties. And so the story about the girl who's trafficked is actually more to do, even though it's quite tense and it's a story where you wonder what's going to happen to her, it's actually a story about the maternal bond. It's how she feels about her mother, and that's the end of it. And so at the end, even though there's no sort of clear-cut resolution about what she's going to do in her situation, you feel that it's kind of redemptive in a way, because she actually builds a relationship with her mother, which sounds a bit twee actually now that I've said it like that. But
that brings me to some of the places that you go in the starker and the harsher and darker stories. You know, they're more about how our dreams are blunted or stunted.
Yes.
Those smaller sort of struggles. And how we make peace with those lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And, you know, again, it is, I think, I'm interested and curious about how we do react, as you say, to life disappointments, what kind of stance we take. And I hope that the stories are, they tend to have redemptive conclusions, that, no, they don't have sort of massively hip, hip, hooray, cheery endings. But I think I kind of have faith in human nature. And I think in the end, we would try and do the right thing. Mm. And you know what? If it wasn't a story about conflict, it wouldn't be a story. You know, conflict makes a story. And the second you put a character in a position where they have to make choices and they're in trouble and there's conflict, then that's a story. Whether they manage to overcome the obstacles in the way they anticipate, or as you say, they possibly won't have their dream ending, but hopefully in that process, in that overcoming of obstacles, they will learn something about themselves. And so that's the idea of the story, that most of the characters in these stories, even if they don't get their right true ending that they aspire to and deserve, they will have found something about themselves and they will have an internal change. So it's a sense of change, I think, in, you know, in their psyche.
Well, it is an exciting and very fun book to read, despite, you know, as we say, covering some dark territory, in part because there is a lot of playfulness in there. And also I liked that you sort of played with the reader's assumptions as well. You know, you sort of take that same stereotype and turn it on our heads as well.
Yes.
You know, so it's very fun.
Exactly. And yeah. I think it is fun to subvert our expectations. Mm-hmm. And I like doing sort of playful. I think it's good to be playful. You know?
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk to you. I don't want to talk any more about the book because I want people to rush out. Have just enough to go rush out and buy it.
Exactly.
It is called Lama Sutra. Get out there and buy it. If you have any trouble, just go to your website.
Exactly. Yes.
MelanieWhitman.com.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay. But it's available on Amazon through the Inktears website. But yes, as you say, come to me and it'll
Excellent.
Be fine.
Okay, but now I want to talk a little bit about you professionally and personally, because you seem to be a busy gal. So you're teaching writing as well?
Yes.
Tell me about your writing courses.
Okay, so
your journey to writing as
okay,
well.
Okay, yeah, so I worked for in pharmaceutical sales and marketing before I had children. Then I gave up work to have children. And then, you know, adored being a mum, but also wanted something more. And I decided to go back. So I went back to university. I did a BA, an MA, now doing a PhD. And then in between that, I had started writing short stories. And originally, I sent them off to what is called the grey market. So People's Friend and Yours magazine. Because I was going to a writing class where a lady who used to be the editor of a magazine, features editor. So I did that first of all, and then I kind of realised that it wasn't quite my style. I liked something a bit edgier. And in fact, when I was doing the MA, I then sent off some of my stories to the same magazine, I won't say what the name is, who I had written for quite some time. And she came back to me and said, oh no, Melanie, they're far too unsettling for our readership. So suddenly, you know, there's certain, obviously, certain formats that certain styles of magazines require. But anyway, so yes, so I did the MA, and then I started teaching locally and at Chichester University. So I lecture at Chichester University, but also I started running writing classes in Farnham. And I run classes, I've been doing it for probably 8 years now. So I do Tuesday mornings at the Farnham Pottery, and Thursday evenings, and people come to my house, and we have 2 hours of writing, discussing writing. I give exercises, and then we discuss the work afterwards. But I think that everybody has a story in them. As I say, we're exposed to narrative from when we're very young. We naturally put our situation, personal situation and circumstances, into a story form when we tell our friends. And it's just a question of getting that down on paper and me teaching you how to edit and how to write it. And so I have lots of people who come who've never written before, but it's just a question of being able to form their experiences or their ideas into a story format with a story arc. And it's great fun.
And you do cover a lot of different genres, and you also have an editing service as well.
Yes,
so if people
I do.
Are getting far enough along, and they want to,
yes,
they want to have it professionally shaped your person.
Absolutely.
Tell me about your sort of interest in different genres.
Yes. So as I said, I started off actually by writing for the grey market, so for an elderly readership, and you had to have a certain list of points you would have to cover.
Baking, then, gardening.
Yes, and they had, but again, bizarrely, they had to be very, very strong, active protagonists. And actually,
aspirational literature,
yes,
at any age.
Well, I'll tell you what, okay, well, I'll tell you a funny story. So the first story that I have published in, again, I won't say in the name of the magazine, I did a funny story. It was called Priscilla's Predicament. And it was a funny story about a woman who'd never had children. She was in her 70s, was looking after a godchild, something. And this baby had been thrust upon her. And I think it was her goddaughter's new child or something. Anyway, she'd been left with the baby without nappies. So I said that she obviously falls in love with this baby. She's actually very capable. And so instead of a nappy, she used an incontinence pad. Given that the magazine was advertising Stana stairlifts and incontinence pads, mm-hmm, it was sent straight back to me. You cannot use this. Instead,
Priscilla would never.
Yes,
be
never. Could you use a mulberry scarf instead? And a Clarins powder compact instead of talc. So that's what we had to change.
Perfect,
it for.
Yes.
So it's little things
product
like that.
Product placement is everything.
Exactly. So suddenly she was changed instead, and she was obviously a much smarter grandmother or godmother. But yes, so I so that's that. But also, I in my writing courses, and obviously I tend to write more literary things now. So I have a workshop on myth and legend, which, as we were saying earlier, it's about taking inspiration from stories that we know from our sort of our heritage, our traditional narrative heritage. And then I have another session on, it's called Rewriting the Self. And so it will be someone who would want to write memoirs or would just want to write from personal experience. If you're blogging, writing a memoir, or just turning your personal experiences into fiction. So there's a session on that. Radio plays, I do a workshop on radio plays. And so people come down for the day, includes lunch for my one day workshops. And it's a fun day, actually. It's a very nice day. So all the details are on my website. And then obviously I do the weekly course, which covers characterization, plot, setting, all the viewpoint, all the kind of staples of your creative writing course.
Excellent. And I saw recently, because obviously you're, you know, continuing with a PhD, so that this year you have not had time since you finished the collection to do any sort of creative writing of your own.
Yes.
And said you felt a bit blocked. So how do you deal with, you know, so here you are teaching writing.
Yes.
But how do you deal with your own, you know, the pitfalls that you yourself are not immune from?
No, you are totally right. Because lots of people ask me, and there's one sort of day that I do called Banishing the Blank Page. And unfortunately, I can't banish my own blank page. But no, for me, when I was writing on a regular basis, and I'm, as you say, I've got to finish my thesis, my PhD, by July. So at the moment, I'm just concentrating on the critical thesis. And so I haven't really got time to do the creative stuff. But normally, for me, it's physical activity. So in the morning, I've got a mad red setter. So I run every morning with my red setter, and then I come back. And as I run, I do think about what I'm going to write. And I will often come back and will hurl myself at the computer because I'm terrified that if I shower, I will forget it exactly.
You're dripping.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm a morning person. I tend to write in the morning. And normally when I am writing creatively, I'll come up from my run at 8 and I'll write probably all day till 1, and well, not all day, so all morning until about 1 o'clock, and then that'll be me sort of burnt out for the day. I think sometimes it works to have music if you do have a block. Again, sometimes music. And I think the other thing, I had a fantastic lecturer, a chap called Dave Swan, and he used to always say that if you have the arrogance to write, you should have the humility to read. And for me, there are certain authors that if I read them, I want to write. If it's sort of rich lyrical prose, somehow it just stimulates that creative spark and makes me want to write. So
it sounds to me like what you're saying is, instead of staring at the page, is sort of distracting you from, so that you can sort of see it out of the corner of your eye.
Yes.
As opposed to like, where is it? It's sort of letting your brain, it's in there, just let it come to you by...
You're right, Donna, exactly. Because I think it's, when you do try and concentrate on something, in fact, what I say is that sometimes just try and, for a week, write for 20 minutes every day. But literally have whatever works better for you, either use a keypad or use, some people just like pen and ink or pencil and paper. And write, even if you are writing, I can't write. The physical action of your hand holding the pen or on the keys, sometimes it will flow, and at some stage you will run out of saying those words and you will slip into a story.
Sheer boredom.
Yes, exactly.
Just to tell yourself to shut up.
So it's either as a distraction, reading something else, physical activity, music, maybe a cup of coffee, glass of wine.
How many glasses of wine?
That's what I said. So my one-day workshops, I offer people wine at lunchtime and say, do you want to see what it's like writing before wine and after wine? Some people don't accept, which is fine, but some people do. So
again, that's sort of speculative.
Yes, absolutely.
See if it works.
Yeah,
exactly. Follow it through to its conclusion, and you're asleep at your keyboard.
Yes, exactly.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, exactly. And tell me a bit about it, because you've traveled very widely. And even just last week, I think you were in Moscow.
I was, yes.
So tell me a bit about your
peripatetic
existence.
Well, I did languages initially and always wanted to travel. And I had bucket loads of pen friends when I was little. So I used to travel and visit pen friends. So, and then I spent a year on a kibbutz in Israel, which was amazing. I then had a pen friend in Cairo, who I then went to see straight from the kibbutz. So I think some of the stories, I lived in Germany for a year. And there's one of the stories is set in Germany, and I'm trying to think, Lithuania, which I've never... That's an interesting point, actually, is whether in writing, whether you should write from experience or whether you are allowed to research. And for me, I find that it's a bit of a balance of both. So, yes, I've travelled a lot, but I think because it was a long time ago that I was in these different places, I tend to go on Google Map and I then walk the streets to remind me of what it was like. And as I said, with the Lithuanian one, the beginning of the story is set in Lithuania before the girl comes to London. And I've never been. And I had to research for that.
Well, I think that... what's the difference between that and speculative?
Yes.
I mean, you can't, you
yes.
know...
It's fantasy. You know, it is a story. You have to invent. Yes, absolutely. Because some people say, oh, write what you know. You know, I think, you know what? We can write what we know, but also we write what we don't know. And as you say, we naturally are interested in people. There are natural paths into stories. There are things we know about people. If you're creating a character, for me, it tends to be a combination of people I know, people I've seen in the street. I might see a lady walking down the street and thinking, oh, I wonder what she does. What if? And then I'll give her the habits of my aunt or the hair of my best friend. And so you cobble together these kind of elements to make a new character that's partially invented. And it's the same with travel. From all the time that I've spent traveling, there's certain smells of countries, certain sites that you do drip feed into your stories, but you don't necessarily set the whole story in a specific location.
Excellent. Melanie, thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
Good luck with the awards.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from you soon.
Oh, thanks, Donna, very much.